Wah bam bloom bam 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 to the boot. Oh rude. 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 To the boot.
The new book, Good Booty: Love and Sex, Black and White, Body and Soul in American Music, is by Ann Powers, NPR's acclaimed music critic. It is a sweeping history of popular music in the United States, where Powers examines how popular music shapes fundamental American ideas and beliefs, allowing us to communicate difficult emotions and truths about our most fraught social issues, most notably sex and race. Ann Powers is NPR's music critic and correspondent and one of the nation's leading music writers. Again, the name of the book is Good Booty, and we welcome Ann Powers to the roundtable this morning. Ann, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, too.
As NPR's music critic, at what point did you decide that you wanted to take a really immersive look into how popular music shapes us?
I've always been interested in this subject. I mean, it's fundamental, really, to the way I approach music writing. And let's be honest, it's fundamental to popular music and rock and roll, especially. I started formulating the structure of the book, gosh, about 10 years ago, maybe, in my mind anyway, and started working on it in earnest about 6 years ago. And initially, I was going to just look at the 20th century, but at the time, I was living in Alabama, going to New Orleans a lot, and really had to take on New Orleans as a subject, I felt. So I ended up writing that first chapter all about New Orleans in the 19th century as the seedbed of everything that came later.
Talk a little bit about Martin Luther King's idea of somebody-ness and how that came to be really almost the spine of what you're talking about.
It really, really did. I feel that I've always been aware of this concept of somebody-ness that Martin Luther King had, which is the essential dignity, joy, resilience within a person's psyche, soul, however you want to describe it, that can survive oppression, that can survive violence, even survive the dehumanization of a person by another. And, you know, from that spirit of somebody-ness, which we need to nurture in community, comes activism, comes art, comes everything, to me, valuable in life. And music, it feeds our somebody-ness. It is a nurturing force for that within us and helps us see the somebody-ness in other people and hear it, I guess. And that is really what I sought in these stories.
It's interesting because the subtitle of the book is Love and Sex, Black and White, Body and Soul in American Music. You could think those could be very separate concepts and very separate chapters in the book. However, you talk about how that's all intertwined, which is fascinating.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for saying it. It's fascinating. Well, you know, eroticism to me isn't just about biology. It isn't just about a certain part of your body. It's about your whole self. And I think I talk about different kinds of erotic connections, whether it's a mother to a child or you know, lovers, obviously, or communal, or with God. I have a chapter all about gospel music, and some people have asked, well, how can you include gospel music in a book about sexuality? Well, for one thing, gospel music created structures and forms that later became the way that rock and soul performers expressed sexuality, but also that feeling of longing and yearning for the divine is completely connected to a person's longing and yearning for another, or a person's conjuring that spirit within herself. And I don't think there is any separation there.
And I guess, and that's exactly what I mean by fascinating. So if you have a song that much of our music talks about sex, they are all also talking about race. And then
yes,
sex and religion are often linked because they cultivate those feelings in us.
Well, music is a mobile art form. It is an art form that is representative of the people who make it, but also can be shared. And, you know, a fundamental conversation that we always need to have in America is what happens when very different people encounter each other. What happens sometimes is beautiful and sometimes is oppressive, but music explores all of those things. And, you know, I mean, there's a longstanding discussion among writers and fans of music about appropriation, you know, the theft of, there's a famous phrase, love and theft, which means, you know, white performers who love black music, but also appropriate it, take it on. I acknowledge that, and I think that's very real. I also think we need to talk about the way that things mix and mingle, the hybrid, you know, how different elements, different identities come together within music. I'm fascinated with the idea of the mix and the metaphor of the mix, starting in, you know, the beginnings of this country, when in the streets in New Orleans, all kinds of people would encounter each other and make music together. Black and white, immigrants, Latin, French, whatever, they all came together. And certainly the systems of oppression have separated us, but music is a force that, at least for a moment, can bring us together.
Much like the generation itself, you write about the 70s and talk about how sex and music maybe got out of hand isn't the term, but it certainly got very wild.
Yeah. Well, the 70s is a fascinating time. It's the, you know, it's the morning after the night before of the 60s of the sexual revolution and the cultural revolution, the countercultural revolution. In the 70s, identity groups started to assert themselves politically. So you have LGBTQ pride, gay pride, as it was called at that time. You have a black militant movement. You have feminism coming up. And so all these individual groups were expressing themselves and asserting themselves. And sexuality at the same time became something that people were talking about frankly in their own relationships. This was the era when The Joy of Sex was the number one bestseller for like 2 years. It was the era when people were experimenting with open marriage. It was swingers, key parties, all this stuff was happening, and music reflected that pretty directly.
And you talk in the book about how sort of all hell breaks loose in the 70s, but then you see a backlash in the 80s and early 90s.
It was inevitable because a terrible epidemic, the HIV/AIDS epidemic, which, you know, for many years, people didn't even really understand what was happening, how it was being transmitted. There's so much fear about HIV/AIDS, and, you know, tragically, it seems to begin among gay men, an already stigmatized group in our culture at that time in the 80s. And, you know, it was very devastating. I was living in San Francisco at that time. I was a young woman in San Francisco, and I saw it. You know, it just devastated whole neighborhoods, whole friend groups would die. And then, you know, this changed the way that Americans related to sexuality, and it led to a different attitude about sexuality. If you were a kid, you grew up under the specter of HIV/AIDS, no matter whether you were straight, gay, bisexual, whatever, you know, it just, free love of the 70s didn't apply in the same way. So attitudes changed. There was a Puritan backlash. People found different ways to cope with that. You know, the only thing I can say that's positive about that era is that it also allowed for a certain kind of revisionism about certain things that weren't so great about the 70s. For example, feminism in punk challenged the extreme machismo of hard rock and heavy metal. So that was a good thing, you know. So there were good things that came out of it as well as bad.
Because you do write that punk and hip-hop both propelled the backlash that we saw during this time.
Yeah, hip-hop is interesting. It's very complicated and beyond the scope of my book. There's great writing out there by writers like Joan Morgan about hip-hop and gender and sexuality. And hip-hop, which really redefined popular music starting in the 80s and then into the 90s, also had a strong Puritan streak and a strong masculine streak. This was a time when African-American men were being you know, always an incredibly challenged group within America, an incredibly, you know, an often stigmatized and wrongly criminalized group within African or within American culture. They were finding a voice within hip hop. That voice at times excluded women, or it was, you know, really about hardness and masculinity. And some women who did find themselves within hip hop, find their voice within hip hop, they created very powerful music, like Salt and Pepper, Queen Latifah. Today we have Nicki Minaj, or Missy Elliott. Of course, she created a whole new language. But definitely hip hop is a super complicated realm when it comes to sexuality. And I hope others also write more about that subject in the future.
When you look at the current day, the music industry has changed substantially since the 90s and even the 2000s. It's been a very quick turnaround, and it has changed dramatically. When you look at those changes, many of which are just technological changes, how does that change the erotic possibilities within the music itself?
I think young people today, their experience of their own identities is so different than what we've experienced in previous generations. And that's, of course, because of the internet, because of technology. You can have a real self that extends and connects to as many virtual selves as you want. And sexuality being a fundamental part of being human changes in that situation, certainly on a crass level. Internet is for porn, as the song from the Broadway musical Avenue Q says.
Right.
So pornography is a lot more accessible to everyone. But I'm thinking more about how people can present themselves and encounter each other almost in a fictional world while still in the real world, you know, or the physical world. What is the real world? Who knows? So I hear that the influence of this in pop music and artists like Britney Spears, the blurred lines of today, it's a very confusing time.
As we wrap up our discussion, talk about the title. I assume a nod to Little Richard.
Of course, of course. The patron saint of popular music in America. He's still with us, so he's not a saint yet. He's a living saint.
Right.
Yes, Good Booty was an original lyric from the song Tutti Frutti that, of course, was a huge hit for Little Richard. And in an earlier version that Little Richard would perform in nightclubs throughout the South, it had much dirtier lyrics. And Good Booty was basically the point of the song. When Tutti Frutti was, when he recorded it and rewrote it with a young woman named Dorothy Labastri, they added in the nonsense lyrics. So you have Tutti Frutti, Ah Rudy. But I think we can make sense of nonsense and hear the good booty behind the words he used. Good booty to me, it's about joy and fun and pleasure. It's also about the fact that music is a commercial realm. You know, it is a realm of plunder as well as of positive connections. And I like the way the phrase contains both of those things.
The name of the book, Good Booty, Love and Sex, Black and White, Body and Soul in American Music. The book is published by Day Street. Ann Powers, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
I so appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Good Booty by Ann Powers. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.